sure hope you're hungry. Ooh, I'm starving. Wash those hands, pull up a chair, and secure that feed bag. Because it's time to listen to Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss attempt to use human language to converse with and pick the brains of other developers. I thought there was going to be food. So buckle up and grab that O-shit handle, because this ride is going to get wild. This is the Syntax Supper Club.
Welcome to Syntax. On today's Syntax Supper Club, we have the author of Svelte, Rich Harris, on to talk all things Svelte. And if you are new to Svelte, you don't know what it is, this will be a good one for you, as well as if you are experienced with Svelte. My name is Scott Tolinsky. I'm a developer from Denver, Colorado. And with me, as always, is Wes Boss.
Hey, everybody. Stoked to talk about Svelte today.
Yeah, me too. Welcome, Rich. How's it going, man?
It's going great. How are you?
We're doing good here. This is number two recording for us today. And the first one had like major lag. We did some restarts. We did some speed tests, and it's feeling a little bit better on this one so far. So
I just moved into a new house like a couple of days ago, and I'm just in the bedroom right now while I'm working on the office. And I thought, oh man, like I thought my speed test was doing great. But so I ran a Ethernet cable from the two rooms over to plug in here. And my wife's like, what are you doing?
just trying to get it all going. And yeah, it was bizarre though. We were like, we'd both ask a question at the exact same time.
Yeah, that's a frustrating part about a podcast when there's lag, is that we step over each other and then we don't have that good back and forth. So excited that it's working now.
This episode is sponsored by two amazing companies. One of which is Gatsby, the fastest front end for the headless web. And the other is Lightstep Incident Response, intelligent on-call scheduling and escalation. More about those later on in the show. So, Rich, I think the first little bit, maybe give us an introduction to who you are, what you do day to day, and then we can get into some Svelte stuff.
Sure. I mean, what I do day to day is Svelte. Ever since I joined Vercel last November, it is my full-time job to work on open source, which is an amazing privilege. Prior to that, I spent my entire career drifting in and out of newsrooms, got into open source as a way of doing journalism, and I've been here ever since.
Yeah, I've been always following a lot of the kind of features you'd been working on and stuff in the past. It was always really, really cool stuff. So Svelte is a framework for the web. Do you want to maybe give, like, if people are totally green to Svelte, they don't know what it is, maybe they've heard me or Wes talk about it. Can you maybe give a Svelte 101 for the uninformed?
Yeah, I can try. To be honest, we probably need to update our sales pitch a little bit, because when it came out, it was this very novel thing. But now the things that made it novel have been kind of incorporated into a lot of other frameworks. And so we need to talk a little bit more about why it makes sense to use Svelte as opposed to one of the myriad other JavaScript frameworks that you can use. In essence, it is a way of developing web applications more easily using a declarative component format. And what's different about Svelte is, because we fully lean into the idea that the code that you write and the code that you run do not need to be the same thing, because we have a compiler in the middle, we can give you this very concise, very expressive language, essentially, for describing your user interface components. And so the what it is it is a framework for building web applications. And the why you would use it is that it makes you more productive. It's a really fun framework to use, and you can do stuff very quickly when you're using it.
It's very enjoyable. Like, I would say it's been a long time since I had that moment when I use something, because it's like, and it probably the last time I had that was like Angular, coming from jQuery to Angular. It just updates, right? And like, oh, it just works like that. Oh, repeating like that. Okay. And not to say that Svelte is Angular, they're obviously very different, but it's a very enjoyable framework to use. You can see why everyone's going to it.
I should add to that, because I'm talking a lot about the developer experience of using Svelte, and I think it's really important to I think web development should be fun. Like, we're in web development because we like building stuff on the web, and building stuff on the web should be more fun than building on other platforms. And I think that is very much what Svelte is about. But when you talk about this stuff, inevitably someone on Twitter will get angry at you because you're prioritizing the developer experience over the user experience.
Totally.
And what... So the whole point of Svelte, the reason that it came into being, the reason that we designed it the way that it's designed, is that we believe that the developer experience and the user experience are not these kind of poles on a spectrum. Like, you don't create a better developer experience at the cost of user experience. Because we have this compiler-centric mindset, we can have this really good developer experience without compromising on user experience. So Svelte apps, they're really small. They start up quickly. They are very fast to update when you have a lot of data changing very quickly. And so the whole idea is that you kind of get the best of both worlds.
Nice. Yeah, it's funny. I come from, like, I mean, before, I mean, when I was building full stack applications, I was doing a lot of Meteor stuff. And I think people got burnt a little bit on Meteor because they felt the ease of that developer experience was super nice. But then it did come at a cost to the user experience at the end of the day, especially when it comes to scaling. But it felt so nice that everybody was like, oh, this is great. Let's work in this. And then you'd get burned later down on the road. But I mean, I totally agree. It doesn't have to come at a cost. It just occasionally has in the past. Maybe that's where they've picked up that that feeling. I'm wondering a little bit about, like, Wes mentioned, you know, the feeling of writing Svelte code. Specifically, one of the things that makes me feel that way is, like, the templating language. It feels very much like templating languages that I know Wes and I have spent quite a bit of time with, whether that is, like, handlebars or anything like that. Can you talk maybe about the influence in the templating language? Like, where did you develop the templating language from, or what was, like, your main inspiration for that specifically?
So you mentioned handlebars, and that was a huge influence to me many years ago. We used to have Mustache and we had handlebars, and there was kind of a informal standard around this stuff. Like, in the early 2010s, you could not move on NPM without bumping into some implementation of a Mustache variant. And the idea was, like, people were just getting used to this idea that instead of doing this imperative DOM manipulation, you would have template fragments and you would inject data into them. And in that way, you would declaratively build up your application. The trouble was, there were two things. Number one, the way that you would then get that instantiated template into your app was just by replacing a chunk of HTML. And replacing a chunk of HTML meant removing the existing DOM and putting new DOM in. And that is an inefficient process. If you're changing lots of things all of the time, then that is very wasteful compared to surgically updating the DOM. The second problem with template languages historically was that they're kind of inflexible. Inside your Mustaches, you can't have arbitrary JavaScript expressions. You don't have access to a module system, anything like that. And so because of all of those limitations, a lot of people gave up on templating as a concept and instead embraced, you know, the it's just JavaScript mindset of React and so on. But I had grown up with templates. I felt that they're a really natural way to write code. And so rather than kind of throwing out that concept, Svelte took the best bits of languages like handlebars and kind of brought them into the modern age, where you can use JavaScript inside your template expressions and you do have access to the module system. And so I think personally that it's the optimal place to be, to have a template system, but also have all of the power of JavaScript. Some people disagree. They think that templates are a dead end, and that's fine. You know, there's room for a lot of different opinions on this. But yeah, that's where it came from. It came from that world. I think handlebars is probably the single biggest influence.
Yeah, I think if you come from the handlebars world, I think that can feel not like obvious, but it can feel definitely inspired. And that feels great for those of us who have spent a lot of time in that world. But especially, I think some people might even see this Svelte templating language and just assume that it is like that same sort of thing, rather than having JavaScript expressions or the the lessons learned from maybe past React-based component or JSX stuff that now we have some really advanced templating abilities, especially in Svelte. You know, and the Svelte one is growing all the time. Recently, you guys launched like the const tag in the Svelte templating language, where you can essentially define a variable in the templating language. And to me, that like little things like that just make your life so much better, I think, overall.
Oh, what would you use that for, the const tag?
Well, so that's if you have if you're iterating over an array of objects and you want to derive some value from each of those objects, like, you know, const full name equals object.firstname plus object.firstname.
Okay. Yeah.
Like that sort of thing, it's useful for, especially if you're going to be using that multiple times inside the block.
Oh yeah, so you don't have to dip out to your JavaScript. You can do it all inside of the template. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, the other way you would do that, Wes, in the past would have been just creating a subcomponent, like a child component, and then you would have to do that computation in the child component.
Pass it in.
Yeah. Today's episode is sponsored by Gatsby, the fastest front end for the headless web. We've talked about Gatsby a whole bunch on this show. This makes the hardest parts of building a performance site easy with prefetching, lazy loading, and image optimization baked in. If you've never used the image tools within Gatsby, you are in for a treat because they make things really super easy to build in plugins that do like a blur load effect or an SVG load effect to make your images seem lightning fast responsive, but also serve up the correct image size or serve up a progressively loading image so that thing loads so quickly. If you're building a headless content-rich site, then Gatsby's GraphQL data layer allows you to source web content from anywhere using its thousands of plugins, or you can easily write your own. Not only that, you can take your site to Gatsby Cloud, the only cloud optimized for Gatsby with the fastest builds and reliable build previews. So are you building a site where performance is of the utmost importance? You're going to want to check out Gatsby at gatsby.dev/syntax and get your first site up in minutes and experience the speed of Gatsby. That is gatsby.dev/syntax. Thank you so much for Gatsby for sponsoring.
I got a question about immutability. So one thing that is sort of like ran into our heads in React land is, and I don't want to talk too much about like React versus Svelte, but we talk a lot about like everything must be immutable, and you want to update a variable, you have to do this whole song and dance of setting state and taking a copy and overwriting it and not reaching in. And then you go into Svelte and it's just like, well, you got a variable, just update that variable and you're done. What about immutability there? Like, what do you say to people that say there's an issue with immutability there?
I think immutability is a very useful concept. I think in general, the less you can have state being mutated in different parts of your application, the more predictably it's going to behave and all of the rest of it. That said, there is a cost to immutability. Every time you have to create a whole new object and copy over all of the properties, there's a performance overhead to that. And in many cases, when you're mutating things in a local, predictable way, you're not introducing the kinds of problems that immutability is supposed to solve. And so by allowing you to mutate your objects, we're giving you the option to do things in a more performant way. We do encourage immutability in certain places. Like you're adding a new to-do to the array of to-dos or something. Like it is often better to just create an entirely new array. But it's not something we force. Whereas, you know, in React land, you kind of have to do that because if you don't have immutable data, then you can't use concurrent features, for example. So because React is leaning so much into this idea of concurrency, immutability is completely necessary. And with that, you get all of the problems of like the performance overhead. And so then you have to start memoizing stuff and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so like in order to have this one big overarching feature, like you have to solve all of these kind of problems that fall out of it. In Svelte, we don't have concurrent mode. That is arguably a limitation of the Svelte model. But our position is that it's an essentially an unnecessary feature that causes more problems than it solves. And so we allow you to treat mutable data or immutable data like according to your own preferences and the needs of your application.
Yeah, nice. What are the things that like when we often like talk about when we talk about Svelte is that it's like compiled away or that it's a compiled language. Would you be able to maybe explain a little bit like what it means that Svelte is less of shipping a library like React is, where it's you have a Svelte file and that compiles to JavaScript. Can you maybe explain a little bit about how that process works to somebody who might not maybe know, like they say, well, at the end of the day, we still, you know, it still spits out library code. What's the difference there? How does that work essentially?
Yeah. So again, this is where this is a comparison that makes more sense against React than against other frameworks, because like a lot of frameworks actually do fairly similar things these days. But in a React app, the way that you update your page is you generate a new snapshot of the virtual DOM, either for your entire application or for some subtree of your application. Conceptually, you're re-rendering the entire world, and then you're handing it off to React, which must then compare the old stuff to the new stuff, and then figure out how we take the virtual DOM, the declarative intention of what the page should look like, and translate that into actions that update the real DOM. And that has a cost, not just in terms of the diffing process itself or in terms of rerunning your component code, but you have to have the code that is capable of doing that. And React doesn't know what kind of virtual DOM you're going to provide it with. It doesn't know whether you're going to be using this element or that element, this event handler, that event handler. So it has to be prepared for every eventuality, essentially. And that means code. It means that you have to have the library code as part of your application. Otherwise, you might have some virtual DOM that it just doesn't know what to do with. And that is not the case in Svelte and in other frameworks that have a similar approach, because we essentially look at the code at build time and we know which features of the framework you're using. And so we only include the features of the framework that you're using. So, for example, if you don't have any SVG elements in your application, we don't include the code for generating SVG elements. That's a very simple example that doesn't really have much of an impact on byte size, but there are other examples that do have more of an impact on byte size. And so that's what we mean when we talk about the framework being compiled away.
Nice. I always like to think about it as like, you can include more with Svelte because you don't have to ship everything, right? You can include animation libraries at zero cost to the users who aren't using those animation libraries, right? As opposed to, if you bake in animations to React, all of a sudden you have a little bit more to that library, right?
Yeah.
What do you think about web components? We get a lot of people on the podcast that are like, no, you don't need any of this. Web components are the answer. And to that, we always say like, well, then why aren't more people using web components and whatnot? What are your thoughts about web components?
I have so many thoughts.
All right, let's hear them.
Yeah, we can talk a lot about that.
I mean, depending on who you ask, a lot of people are using web components. The charts are going up and to the right. And it's very hard to know how that actually translates in terms of, kind of developer sentiment and so on. Because you have some very big sites like YouTube, which use web components. You have the AMP framework uses web components. And those really skew the usage metrics. And so it's very hard to tease this stuff apart. Whenever you see developer surveys about how we build web apps, you see that the usage and the interest in web component frameworks is weirdly low, suspiciously low compared to the numbers on NPM and the numbers on like Google's stack counter and like all of that sort of thing. And so it's honestly hard to know how popular web components are. My own personal feelings about web components is that they are they're kind of a calcification of early 2010 era best practices in web development, and they haven't really survived the developments of the last 10 years. And that if you do use web components, you are opting into a set of limitations which you don't have if you use non-custom HTML. So the big ones are around server-side rendering, for example. There is this thing called declarative shadow DOM, which theoretically allows you to do server-side rendering with web components. But the way that you actually have to use it is extraordinarily convoluted. And so we're in this situation where you can do everything that web components are supposed to let you do with existing frameworks, and not a lot that you can't do with existing frameworks, but you opt into all of these downsides. I've written about this, like I've articulated why I don't personally see a lot of value in web components. But I tend to find that whenever I do talk about this stuff online, I get just a barrage of abuse on the internet because for some reason the defenders of this technology are particularly ornery in a way that most adherents to different ways of building web apps are not. I don't know why.
Oh, that's good. Well, you can go on as long as you want. We'll have some web component people on the podcast to even it out as well then.
Yeah. Well, it's always funny to me though, because it is the experience, especially of authoring just like raw web components itself. I think if you've spent any time in Svelte or React or Vueland, the like, it feels like a tremendous step backwards authoring wise even. So then like what you have is the way to write web components becomes maybe a layer on top of them that make the development experience a little bit nicer. You have what, Lit and was Solid or no, not Solid, Stencil.
I think it's
Stencil. Yeah. So you have all these layers on top that try to ease some of that. And at that point it's like, why not go all the way and use something even a little bit nicer?
Yeah. I mean, no one says that you should author web components by hand, like actually doing the class, my thing extends HTML element. Because you know, the authoring experience is absolutely trash. And I think everyone agrees on that. But you know, if you do have to opt into one of these opinionated frameworks where the interop benefits are really kind of oversold, then it is hard to see what the actual benefit is.
Yeah, totally.
Can we talk about virtual DOM for a sec? Virtual DOM is a concept in specifically React and other frameworks where they maintain a virtual DOM and then they can diff it and they know the actual DOM, the actual elements on the page, they know exactly which elements to update. So Svelte just says, nah, we're not going to do that. How come you don't need the virtual DOM and how come other people do need the virtual DOM? Are Svelte apps still as fast when you're doing quite a bit of stuff?
Well, they're faster. They're significantly faster. The virtual DOM is not a mechanism for making things fast. The virtual DOM is overhead. It's a way of allowing you to build applications declaratively that is not desperately slow. I talked earlier about how in the beginning, template languages, they would let you generate some HTML from a template and some data. And then in order to update the page, you'd have to yank out the existing DOM and put in this fresh HTML, which would get turned into DOM. And that's like an expensive process. And because of that, no one actually does that. It's a complete straw man. No one was really building applications that way. But then React came out and said, well, look, we have this virtual DOM mechanism, which allows us to just update the parts that changed. And so it's a similar idea. You have this declarative approach to saying what is going to be in the page.
Yeah.
But then instead of replacing everything, you're just replacing the small parts. The trouble is that in order to find out which small parts have changed, like you need to do this whole virtual DOM diffing process. Mm-hmm. If you don't have that, if instead of saying, okay, here's my div, and inside my div, I have a button, and inside my button, I have some text, and the text has changed. If instead of all that, you can just say, oh, the text and the button changed. Well, then that's the only thing that you need to do. You don't need to go through this rigmarole of re-evaluating the entire application and comparing it against something that came before. And the reason that Svelte can do that is because it's a compiler, because it can see your source code. And because we're using templates, it's very easy to be like, oh, well, the div is always going to be there. Like that, mm-hmm. That's not going anywhere. The button is always going to be there. That's not going anywhere because it's not inside like an if block or anything like that. We can guarantee the continued existence of this button as long as the component continues to exist. But this text, that might change. And so what we turn that declarative code into imperative code that just updates the text when the state changes. And that is a much more direct approach than the virtual DOM. I should correct a misconception that I often hear about with virtual DOM, though. The performance problem, first of all, it's not catastrophic. Virtual DOM is acceptably fast for the vast majority of tasks. But when it is slow, it's not slow because of that diffing process. It's slow because in order to generate the virtual DOM, you need to re-execute your components for every single state change. And inside those components, you're calling functions, you're allocating memory to create like new arrays and stuff. Like maybe you're iterating over a bunch of items and then creating new virtual DOM inside all of those. Like all of that mounts up, but it mounts up in this very subtle death by a thousand paper cuts way. So it becomes pretty hard to optimize. And when you have a system that just eschews that entire method instead of in favor of just surgically updating the bits that did change, then you don't have that problem and things are much faster. And Svelte is one way of doing that. There are others. Solid, for example, works around this problem in a completely different way. What they have in common is they're not regenerating your entire application on every state change.
Yeah. And it feels like they kind of like in React world, the burden of performance then gets kind of passed to the developer who then has to institute, you know, memoization themselves and use callback and all these different like performance hooks that we have to then add to the code ourselves. And if you don't add them or you're not doing the performance best practices, you risk getting like a hit for that. So it's nice that you don't even have to think about that in Svelte world. That's been a major performance increase in my life, is just not having to even think about memoization in that kind of way in the same way I used to in React.
We need to put that on our, Scott and I have a show in the notes right now that we've been working on. It's called like, Do It For Me, or like, Why Do I Have to Do This? And like, that's a perfect point on there, you know, like it's not necessarily like, oh, why do I have to do this? But it's a great one. Is how do you solve that problem? We just don't do it at all. You don't put that on your developers.
Yeah, don't put it on the developers.
Yeah, I like to think about the computer as being kind of like an intelligent butler. Like you just tell it what you need and it does it for you. Like the idea is that the partnership between the programmer and the computer should be such that the programmer is spending the bulk of their time on the creative aspects of web development, mm-hmm. not worrying about the plumbing, not worrying about the mechanics, just worrying about, you know, the architecture and the design. And that is what humans are good at. And the grunt work of figuring out, oh, did this thing change or not? Like that is what computers are for.
That's what computers are good at. Yeah. I often felt that way with CSS in the early days. People always have these rules of like, do this and don't do this and only animate these things. And it's just like, well, can't the computer figure that out for me? Like, why am I memorizing these like obtuse rules for the best output? Can't those obtuse rules be output on a computer that could replicate it?
Exactly.
This episode is also sponsored today by Lightstep Incident Response, the all-in-one incident response platform for DevOps and SREs. Lightstep Incident Response is built on the ServiceNow platform, which is used by over 6,000 companies. You pay for the services you actually use, not the number of the people on your team, which is important because you can scale your incident response team without adding to your bill. You get intelligent on-call scheduling and escalations. You can get the full context on your service health, active alerts, and who's on call. Lightstep Incident Response immediately pinpoints issues and groups alerts with machine learning, reducing your time to respond. And this means less noise and more personalization for precise notifications, where you can take control on declaring incidents and automatically notifying the right teams. And you can get unified incident response by seamlessly orchestrating alerts and incident triage with on-call scheduling across Slack, Teams, Zoom, desktop, and mobile. So what you'll want to do is head on over to lightstep.com/syntax and you'll get a free 30-day trial. Listeners of Syntax will also receive a free Lightstep Incident Response t-shirt after firing an alert or incident. So check it out. Are you in need of incident response? Check out lightstep.com/syntax. Here's an interesting question. What is your personal favorite thing about Svelte? Like when you're working in Svelte, like what's the thing that makes you be like, oh man, this is awesome?
Oh, good question. In my position, I'm like very often creating new test cases or simple demo apps to show someone a concept or something. I actually don't get to spend that much time working on big apps these days because I'm busy working on the framework itself. And it is really nice. Like I always get like a nice kind of warm, fuzzy feeling on just how quick it is to create a new example or a new component. Particularly with like things like SvelteKit.new, which fires up a StackBlitz thing with a SvelteKit app ready to go. Like I can create workable examples with Svelte just incredibly fast, and I really enjoy that. I guess I would be remiss if I didn't call out some of the features that other frameworks tend not to include, things like scope styles, the animations, the transitions, things that allow you to add polish without needing to sort of trawl the ecosystem and make all of these decisions about which packages you're going to invest your trust in. It's just kind of all there, just set up ready for you to use.
I much prefer that. We talk about that a lot where even just guessing like what folder structure you need, like you talk a lot of stuff in JavaScript land is just like, well, how do I do this? Well, literally any way you want, you can piece together any of these things all together and you can choose your way. And a lot of developers go like, okay, but just tell me where to put my files and just tell me how to do my CSS. And it's nice to have a little bit of choice here and there, but man, is it nice when someone just, at least for myself, I prefer magic and I prefer somebody to tell me how to do things. And it's really nice when you get that without having being too constrained or too rigid, you know?
Yeah, constraints are freeing.
Constraints are freeing. That's a good way.
Like if you ever take a creative writing workshop or something like that, the teacher isn't going to be like, you know, here is a blank page, write a story. They'll be like, okay, yeah, write a story about like a love triangle on a submarine or like something like that. They will come up with some sort of framework in which you have to be creative. And it's so much easier to do that. And programmers often will bristle at that. They'll bristle at the idea that their freedom is being constrained in some way or that they're not able to go out and put together the best of breed of like all of the different possible libraries that they could use or build their own. And so sometimes you'll hear people say that, you know, the reason that React won is because it kind of encouraged this ecosystem of people like filling in all the missing pieces. And I don't think that's why React won at all. I think React won in spite of that fact. Mm-hmm. And it's also worth pointing out that when frameworks do include a lot of this batteries included stuff, and Vue is another example of a framework that provides you with a lot of tools to build stuff, that doesn't preclude you from having user land solutions as well. It just means that you probably aren't going to need to waste time going and looking for one.
Yeah,
totally.
So did React win? And if so, why did React win? I know that's a bit of a loaded question. Or is React, like I'm sure you talk to many people, companies that are switching from React to Svelte. Do you hear a lot of that?
I definitely hear some of it. Yeah. One of the nice things about working at Vercel now is that like I actually get to hear from Vercel customers who are looking at this stuff. Whereas previously I was in a little bit more of a bubble. And so that's been nice. Like I actually get to have conversations with engineers at companies who are building applications with Svelte, and I get to understand what their pain points are, what they enjoy about working with it. And so that's been nice. Did React win? I mean, certainly like right now, React is the undisputed champion. Whether that will still be the case in 5 or 10 years, I have no idea. It would be pretty surprising if it was, because nothing in Webland really stays still for long. But I think we, you know, we probably have a situation where it's not winner takes all, certainly. React is the leader in the front-end framework space, but there's so much room, there's so much diversity in, you know, what people can build on the web that I'm certainly very happy with the niche that Svelte has carved out. Yeah, and you know, we don't think of React as being kind of like a rival or an enemy or something like that. It's a different technological approach that has a lot of merits and a lot of design aspects that we don't agree with. And, you know, we all pay very close attention to what all of the other frameworks are doing, and we steal the best bits and we discard the bits that we don't like. And that's how the front end has evolved over the last few years, is with people stealing each other's best ideas.
Yeah, that's open source, baby. what about, so SvelteKit, we haven't really talked too much about SvelteKit itself, but SvelteKit being a platform to write your applications, essentially. And one of the big questions I get a lot in my YouTube videos or on Syntax here is often people wondering about, is it done? When is it going to be done? And I'm sure you're super tired of hearing questions be asked about that. But is there a specific timeline for 1.0 SvelteKit to be, or do you just sort of when it's ready, it's going to be ready? That type of mentality here.
We do have a timeline in mind, but I'm not going to tell you what it is.
That's totally fair.
Just because, you know, there's every possibility that as soon as you verbalize it, that's when everything goes off the rails. But yeah, we want to get it done. I mean, we want to get 1.0 out of the door. We know a lot of people who are building stuff in production with SvelteKit today, but there's also a lot of people who are saying we will not touch it, or our company will not let us touch it until it hits 1.0. It turns out that building an application framework is a really big job, and there's a lot of stuff that you can get wrong, and there's a lot of stuff that we really want to get right. And it's, although it has been a fairly long, drawn out, what's the word I'm looking for? Like the development process, I think since we first announced it and since we first had a beta version available, has been well over a year at this point. But through the course of that, because people are building stuff with it, we've learned so much mm-hmm. about the right way to do certain things and, you know, what turns out to be an evolutionary dead end. And we're still like being surprised by some of these things. So we do think that taking our time and learning these lessons thoroughly and really testing out different ways of doing things is proving to be the right approach.
Yeah. And as somebody, I mean, I rewrote our platform on SvelteKit. Ooh. I don't know how long ago at this point.
Right, like 6 months at least.
Yeah, maybe that bit ago. It hasn't been a pain to keep up with the updates. There have been, like, you know, breaking changes here or there. But for the most part, like, the major things have all remained or improved from every, you know, every aspect, at least on our end. So, you know, I think if you're looking at picking it up right now, worried about, is it 1.0 or whatever? I think there's no harm in learning anything right now about it, trying to build stuff with it, even if there are minor breaking changes at that.
Been trying to do the breaking changes in such a way that if you do upgrade your version of SvelteKit and suddenly your app doesn't work, it'll fail with an informative error message that tells you exactly what to do. It's not always possible because sometimes you can't anticipate these things. But by and large, I would like to believe that for the people who have taken a chance on SvelteKit and have already started building stuff, that we haven't given them too much pain.
Yeah. No, it hasn't been bad. It's funny, though, that the latest change where the Vite config thing added, there is a, Wes, I don't know if you've seen this, but there has been like a change now where you have a Vite config file, essentially. But when you start it up, it says, oh, you don't, you know, this is no longer here. Here's what you need to do to fix this. And it's like 1, 2, 3. And it's like the very next day on like the Svelte Reddit, people would be like, I'm getting this error. What do I do? And it's like, there's three that tells you what to do. I had to make a YouTube video on how to fix that problem. But it's like, no matter what, any breaking change, I think, will, you know, throw people off a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I also think a lot of us JavaScript developers are conditioned to ignore the stuff that's puked into the terminal because of how much of, like, I had somebody the other day send me like 8 pages of NPM stuff. And they're like, what's going on? I'm like, it says successfully completed at the end after the 400 lines of like blah 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 blah.
Oh yeah, NPM's bad about that though. It's like warn. You're like, this is totally another one you might not have an answer to. But in your brain, like, what does Svelte 4 look like? And I'm not saying like what is Svelte 4 going to look like, but if there is such thing as a Svelte 4, like any sort of advancement of the Svelte idea in your mind, like, what kind of things does that encompass?
Smaller, faster, stronger, better, with the sound like Daft Punk. we have some ideas for how we can take the compiled output and make that more compact than it is today, and also like more memory efficient and so on. I would personally love to spend some time thinking really deeply about element transitions and stuff like that, because we have like perfectly good element transitions today. You know, you can get elements that fade in and out smoothly and all that sort of thing. You can get your lists animating nicely. But when you have more complex requirements, particularly if you have transitions between different routes of a SvelteKit app, you have to really know what you're doing or things will start to get quite dicey. And so I would just love for us to be able to kind of solve that problem once and for all. And it's not so much a question of implementation. It's a question of how you conceptualize these things in such a way that that you can make them understandable to a developer and make them work reliably. So we're going to probably rip out the guts of the transition system and rebuild it with the Web Animations API, which wasn't available when we did Svelte 3, but is now widely enough supported that that is a realistic option. And I'm going to spend a lot of time on the Framer Motion docs.
Do you talk to Matt at all? Matt from Framer Motion, he has that UI. Is it UI.dev? Is that his? Not UI.dev. What's his Motion.dev?
Motion One, I think, is like this new minimal framework agnostic library. But then Framer is the, I believe he works for the company Framer. And Framer Motion just like gives you the ability to do like all of these really slick transitions between different layouts and stuff. And we think that that should just be built into frameworks. And so I'm going to, once SvelteKit 1.0 is out of the door and we've got some bandwidth to think about Svelte for, those are the sorts of things that we're going to be thinking about.
Nice.
I got one question here, and this is not specifically about Svelte, but whenever I talk to people who are like respected in the JavaScript industry, I always like to just see what their thoughts are on specific things. So we're seeing a lot of, I'm not sure how much you dip into like the server side space, but we're seeing a lot of like, we see Dino, Cloudflare has their own thing, Bun rolled out. We're seeing a lot of like alternative JavaScript environments specifically for backend. Do you have any thoughts on any of that stuff? Are you excited about it?
I'm tremendously excited about it. Like this whole evolution that's happening right now is so great for front-end developers, because essentially all of these different runtimes that are emerging are being built on top of web standards, taking web APIs like the Fetch API and all of the things that go with that, like the URL API, and all of these familiar concepts are being incorporated into these edge runtimes. So if you're using a thing like SvelteKit, you can adapt that to Dino or Cloudflare Workers or Vercel Edge Functions or Netlify Edge Functions. Or today I saw an adapter for Bun. You can now run your SvelteKit apps with Bun.
Of course.
Oh, really?
And in all of these cases, like, like it's super easy to take a SvelteKit app and just like use it in all of these different environments with these very small adapters, because it's all based on web APIs. And in fact, there is an effort between a lot of these different companies called the Web Interoperable Community Group, or Winter CG, which is trying to define what is the minimal common surface area of all of these runtimes. And that is all being built on top of web APIs. So this is great, because like I know nothing about DevOps. Like you try and get me to write a Docker file or use Kubernetes, and I will break things in new and new and creative ways. But like, give me an edge function environment, I know how to do that. And so this is essentially making it such that front-end developers like us can build these applications that are instantly available to users all around the world using like a familiar environment. And that's great, because the amount that you can now do as like a single developer is so much more impressive than the things that we were able to do years ago without having a PhD in AWS.
Yeah,
it's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And these new runtimes, it's going to be like free performance for us. I mean, a lot of the stuff you're, like you said, it's just an adapter. We swap it out. If it's better, it's better. It's not something you'd hopefully have to restructure your entire life around.
Yeah. And these things are fast because like you're not using the entirety of Node, because they're built around the idea that a request comes in and you might need to start up from scratch in order to serve a response. These things are designed to start instantly. And that's what makes it practical to just run instances of this stuff all around the world instead of having it run in US East 1 and so that you can handle all of the requests. And it's great. It's going to make the web faster. It's going to make the web easier to use. It's going to make it such that more people can build end-to-end applications. It's a great trend.
Nice. Now it's the part of the show where we get into, we're calling these, what do we ever come up with a cute name for them, Wes? I know we talk about this all the time here. Our dessert questions, our supper club questions.
Something like that, yeah. We need to probably nail a name down for this.
Yeah. So these are our dessert questions, and we're going to just really kind of rapid fire basic questions. So first and foremost, what kind of computer do you use?
I'm on a MacBook Pro.
Yeah, that's pretty much everybody that we talked to. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Once you go Mac, you don't go back.
Yeah. That's probably accurate.
That's how the saying goes. What about keyboard?
I just use the laptop keyboard. I'm probably going to develop horrible repetitive strain injury after a while. But yeah, I'm not one of these people with like the fancy mechanical ergonomic keyboards or any of that. I just use my laptop keyboard.
It's hilarious. Probably 30-40% of our guests are like, I literally just type on the laptop itself, and then a good chunk other of them are using just the Mac keyboard that is Bluetooth. Mac keyboard,
yeah.
And then there's like one person has like one of those fancy ones, and you would expect all developers to be on these like clickety clack amazing ones, but it seems to be everyone who's coming on is just a Mac keyboard.
Yeah. Who has the desk space?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And also it's nice. Like now that so many of us work remotely, like it's nice for your workspace to be portable. Like last week I was up in New Hampshire, in an Airbnb just because we had access to a car for a few days and figured like, why the hell not just go somewhere else. If I had to cart an entire workstation with me, that would have been a lot less practical.
I shove my face into my laptop screen too. Like I get really in there. So if I had a keyboard and stuff, I wouldn't be able to do that. What kind of text editor or what text editor theme and font do you use?
The editor is VS Code. The theme, I'm going to need to look this up. I can never remember. I'm not like attached to a specific theme. Mm-hmm. I'm currently using one that is apparently called Tomorrow Night Blue.
Ooh.
As for the font, let's see if I can see in my settings here. I don't even know. I guess it's just something
the like
normal,
the
like Menlo or Fira Code or something. I don't know. I'm always baffled by like whenever someone shares a screenshot of some code or something in a tweet, like people always reply, what font is that? What theme is that?
Yeah.
Like who cares?
I had to build a bot for that because I get asked it every single time I post anything. People love tweaking and knowing what it is. Yeah. It's funny. The more expert somebody is on this podcast, it seems the less they care about any of this stuff.
Nobody cares. Yeah. Okay, so obviously things are moving really quickly in the web space all the time. What kind of resources do you use to stay up to date with stuff?
Twitter. I think that's basically it. I think I probably get like the JavaScript weekly newsletter occasionally, and I don't ever look at it because I've already seen everything on Twitter.
Yeah.
That and the bookmarks channel of the Vercel Slack. Where my coworkers paste interesting links. I think those are my two main avenues.
Nice. Yeah, we've heard that from quite a bit of people, that it's their work Slack or work sharing of resources, and then Twitter are like the two biggest ones that we often hear. What about what's one piece of advice that you would have for beginners in web development?
Find a friend. If you like, programming is a hellish thing to try and learn by yourself, particularly because it's so hard to find the syntax errors in your own code. And, you know, maybe you've correctly figured out how to configure your editor with like the right linting and all of that stuff so that the syntax errors pop out and you can fix them. But that's probably not the case. If you can have someone else who can look at your code and be like, oh, it's on line 14, then your programming journey is just going to be so much better. And also just like learning about, you know, the names of different libraries that you might want to use. And, oh, have you considered solving it this way instead? Find a programming buddy is the most important thing you can do.
That's something that everybody hits, right? When you're just like, I've been staring at this for 15 minutes. I don't see it. You show it to somebody else and they're instantly like, it's right there. I mean, that can help so much. What's one thing that you're excited for in the future of web tech?
Ooh, something I'm excited for in the future of web tech. I mean, a year ago, I'd have probably said, I don't know, WASM, but I feel like that's kind of fizzling out. I feel like people are slowly coming to the realization that it's not a silver bullet.
Yeah, it's almost like our tech's getting faster. So it's like, well, you know, it's the overhead of having to use.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. There isn't anything right now that I'm super excited about, but I still cling to the belief that one day we're going to have ways of developing software that are a little bit more sophisticated than manipulating abstract symbols in a text editor. And so you got like the whole no code, like Webflow stuff, but it doesn't really do it for me. Like I think that there's a chasm between code and no code that we need to try and find a middle ground of some code where you can work on the same code base at like multiple different levels, depending on like the level of abstraction that is appropriate for the problem that you're solving. And I don't think that anyone has nailed that yet. And I would love to see people spending time figuring out how that's going to work. I think that is the thing that would get me really excited about the future of web development.
Yeah, we talked no code on the podcast. What was it, like maybe a month or two ago? And it is expensive. That was like a big thing. It's like, it's just, we said, you know, death by a thousand services, where you're just paying a bunch of services to connect all the dots. And yeah, I can get kind of up there. What's one thing that you would do differently in your career if you could?
Ooh. I mean, I have had such a fortunate career. I've just had good luck after good luck after good luck. You know, in terms of like the random decisions that I chose about like what to specialize in, about the people that I met along the way and who have helped me, you know, all of these things, I wouldn't want to risk changing any of that. Honestly,
that's a dope answer. Wes, do you want to take the next part?
Last part of the show is we do both sick picks and shameless plugs. I know we caught you a bit off guard at the start of recording this, but is there anything you'd like to sick pick?
So I recently started using a VPN, which I should have done years ago, but I finally got shamed into using a VPN so that I don't need to worry about people snooping on me when I'm using airport Wi-Fi or whatever. After looking at all of the different options, I ended up with one called Mulvad, which is it's super great. It's $5 a month, and they take privacy so seriously that they don't even like know your email address or anything like that. Like you literally just have a random account number, and you send money associated with that account number, and then you install the VPN and use the same account number. It's really great. It's very fast, really easy to switch to different locations, which is handy if you're testing like how a web app performs from Vanuatu or whatever. If you want to be responsible like me and get a VPN, I recommend Mulvad.
Nice. They have a cute little logo too. It's like a...
Their pricing is 1 month, €5 per month. 1 year, €5 per month. 1 decade, €5 per month. I love that. It's just like, we're not screwing you around here. Yeah. That's great. And then any shameless plugs that you'd like to plug to the audience?
Well, I saw a really great documentary recently featuring Scott Tulinski.
Hey, nice.
I'm gonna plug that. It's called Svelte Origins, and it is the story of how Svelte came to be, and it features Scott breakdancing. among other things.
In a tiny, tiny space. When he filmed that, I was like very concerned about kicking all my stuff. He's like, are you sure you want to do this in here? I'm like, yeah, I mean, I do it all the time. But yeah, it is very precarious.
Yeah. I was very skeptical when this whole project started. I was like, what do you mean you want to make a documentary about this framework? How is that going to be interesting for anyone? But Stefan and the crew did such a really good job of the storytelling, and they're really embedded in the community and figured out like what was interesting about the people who use Svelte and the people who build Svelte. And so they did a really nice job. And so it is shameless because I am in it a little bit more than I would like to be in it, but it's a great documentary, and I encourage people who are interested in Svelte or interested in the process of building open source communities to give it a watch.
Yeah, super good. And, you know, those guys did some amazing work over at Honeypot before this. So when they emailed me, I was like, yeah, I know this is going to be incredible work. So and their other works are really great, too. They did a nice one on Laravel somewhat recently as well. So, yeah, check out all that stuff on their channel. We'll post a link in the show notes for that. Well, thanks so much, Rich. This has been awesome. Yeah, really enjoyed picking your brain. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
It's been a long time coming.
Absolutely. Glad we could get you on. I appreciate your time, and have a great day.
You too.
Peace. Thanks. Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.